Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps.
Beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring amazing special guests from the cast and crew.
After that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben and Adam.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back in, 92.9 The Game. It's Abe Gordon here live at Playoff Fan Central, the Georgia World Congress Center. I think I got to, like, clear something up at this point because a lot of the rejoins obviously are incorrect. And I just want everyone to know we're aware that the national championship game is today. John Fricke was originally supposed to be in this slot. He wasn't able to make it down here, so I'm filling in. And we didn't do, I don't think we did production in the name of Abe Gordon for today. We had it in the name of Abe Gordon for yesterday. And so we are well aware.
I keep saying to myself, should I keep playing these? But I want everybody to know that's where you are.
Well, so. No one's come down and said hi yet. So I don't know if it even makes a difference. So make
but, you know, I'm using the rotator. Some of them says tomorrow and some of them don't. Some of them just say,
but
we're going back to Abe.
We are aware that the national – we'd like to keep playing this thing out for the week, but we are aware the national championship game is today. The music has started up here in the Playoff Fan Central. That's because the ESPN studio show that was blabbering nonsense about tonight's title game is finally wrapped up.
That's what I was getting ready to say. Maybe they'll come say hi now that Molly and all the gang has all gotten off of the stage.
What they should do is get in their car and turn me on or listen to Odyssey app so maybe they have some intelligent conversation as opposed to is Jeremiah Smith the number one pick in the 2027 NFL draft like some of the conversation just was. But, hey, man, you do you. I'm sure that's what people are interested in. In the meantime, speaking of futures, we're going to talk about the Georgia Bulldogs and their future because the odds for next year, I know we haven't quite finished things up this year, right? Tonight will be the final game, but the odds for the 2025 national, and again, we're doing, understand, 2020, this is technically 2024's national championship, even though we're in 2025, and then et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the odds for next year in college football, the Georgia Bulldogs have one team ahead of them in the odds to win it all. That being the Texas Longhorns. Now, in our next segment, I'm going to talk about who I think can, will, or won't win the 2025 Heisman. And Texas may come up in one of those categories. But Texas is the odds-on favorite to win the national championship next year. Georgia is tied for second-best odds. They are tied with one of tonight's competitors, not Notre Dame, of course, Ohio State. So Georgia's right behind Texas, tied with Ohio State, among the favorites for next year's national championship. And I just start to ask myself, like, do they really belong there? Do they really deserve to be among those favorites? Now, on one hand, like, it's a fair question to be like, well, if not Georgia, who? Like, you look at the teams this year who either outperformed Georgia or went as far as Georgia, like, is Oregon going to be ahead of them when they're replacing Dylan Gabriel? Like, no, probably not. Like, all right, like, is Alabama going to be ahead of them? Like, no, they got to replace Milroe, and no one really trusts Kalen DeBoer. Like, no disrespect, Mike Conte, and they are returning a lot, and we'll talk to that. But, like, is Penn State and James Franklin, should they be favored? Like, so on one hand, it kind of is like, well, like, someone has to be tied with Texas or Ohio. Like, someone has to be third. Like, it's not going to be Notre Dame. Right, they're replacing Riley Leonard. Is it Clemson? Like, I mean, you could go through the list, and I can rattle off as many teams as you want me to rattle off. And I think for the most part, each time it would be like, well, are they going to be better in Georgia next year? Like, so I, from an odds standpoint, I kind of get why Georgia is where they are, right up alongside with Texas and or alongside Ohio State, right behind Texas. And a lot of that probably has to do with Kirby Smart as well, having two national championships and being largely regarded as the best active college football head coach now that Nick Saban has retired. But I'm still going to ask the question, like, should they be viewed among the title favorites? Like, are we that positive that Gunnar Stockton's going to be a step up from what Carson Beck was this year? I would say the answer to that is no. I mean, there's a lot of people suggesting to me it's going to be a real quarterback competition. Don't be surprised if Ryan Puglisi wins the job. And that's fine, too. If it's Puglisi and not Stockton, insert his name here, too. Like, are we sure that Puglisi's going to do better than what Gunnar Stockton did? I think Gunnar Stockton's got a heavy short end of the stick over the past couple of months in regards to the Georgia offense, in regards to people kind of belittling the job he did as soon as he decided to stay in college and go to Miami. I think Carson Beck did a pretty good job considering what was going around him. A team that offensive line didn't get the job done, a team whose receiving core didn't get the job done, a team whose running backs didn't get the job done. Ultimately, it all falls on Carson Beck. I just don't believe that. So are we sure the quarterback play is going to be improved over this past year? I think it's tough to say. Despite what we believe are inaccurate reports a week ago, if it is still Mike Bobo as the offensive coordinator, does that concern you when you look at some of the other teams in this discussion and what they can do offensively? You got to replace a lot along both lines. Obviously, you're going to send a lot of talent to the NFL draft along the offensive and defensive line, as you normally do. The talent is there, but did they develop over the course of the season? The guys that maybe had limited run because they were behind All-Americans or first and second-day picks in the NFL draft, did they develop in practice over the course of the year? Will the work done in the transfer portal and the recruiting be enough to solve the wide receiver issues? This is the most Georgia has paid attention to the receiving position in a long time. It was a real problem this year. It was a real problem this year. And they have attacked it both in the portal and in recruiting. And it feels like they're set up to have a better year. They got a couple guys coming back and then also add a couple new names, Branch and Thomas and Taylen Taylor and a couple new names into the mix. And then the other question is, can the running back stay healthy? Obviously, this year fell apart. Etienne was not healthy. The Robinson fellows were not healthy. Nate Frazier was bumped up here and there at times. The running backs have got to stay healthy as well. So all that said, all of those questions I just presented that Georgia's going to have to answer, and potentially more than just that, do they still deserve to be among the title favorites in college football? You look at their schedule next year, it's the inverse of what they had this year. Because of the new teams added to the SEC, there's a two-year window where you're just going to play the same schedule, but you flip the road and home games. So you're going at Tennessee, you got a bye week, then you're home against Alabama, home against Kentucky, you're at Auburn, home against Ole Miss, a bye week, then you're going to go against Florida, you're at Mississippi State, and home versus Texas. You've got Georgia Tech on the road, and then early in the season, some interesting non-conference games. Marshall, and then you've got Austin Peay, and then there's a matchup with Charlotte before at the end of the season before Georgia Tech. But again, if not Georgia, then who? When you look at how they compare to some of the other schools, how do they match up? Let's start with the team right above them, right? The Texas Longhorns. Texas is going to lose those top two wide receivers. They're also losing Quinn Ewers. And maybe Arch is an upgrade, but I'm not sold on that yet. Maybe not. And they have a similar question that Georgia's going to have to answer. Can their running back stay healthy? They were down to like RB4 this year. Quintravian Weisner was not their starting running back to start the year. They've been banged up quite a bit, and so they're going to need to stay healthy in the running back group as well. The team they're tied with, Ohio State, look, the quarterback is going to be a question. We'll see what they got going there. They still might pull someone out of the portal, or they might go with Julian Sain. We'll see how it rolls there. But they're going to lose talent everywhere, but they rebuild the same way that UGA does. What about Penn State? Penn State's an interesting one. You're going to lose the majority of your offense. And when I say that, I mean just Tyler Warren. Your passing game is gone without Tyler Warren. Abdul Carter is also out, but they are bringing back a ton. They're bringing back both running backs, I believe. Drew Aller is coming back, and seems to be a mixed result as to whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. I think despite the performance in the playoffs, I do think Drew Aller is a good quarterback, but they need help in the receiving core, and that's going to be a real problem. Alabama, they need a quarterback with Jalen Milroe gone. Can Kalen DeBoer figure things out? Again, it's going to be tough to sell me that you think Alabama should be higher on this list than Georgia. What about Ole Miss? You got to replace Jackson Dart. Lane Kiffin's got to produce in these big moments. I mean, he at some point he's got to. And so ultimately what it settles down at is like someone has to be the third shortest odds or second, tied for second with Ohio State, and that's Georgia. And I'm okay with it, but like I'm also not heading into next year the way we did this year. And what I mean by that is the mindset of Georgia ought to win this national championship. You could say whatever you want at this point in the season. It was pretty unanimous at the start of the year that Georgia should have won the national championship. Again, with what we thought they were going to have, what we thought they were going to be, it felt like it would have been nothing short of a disappointment if they didn't win the national championship. Now, you play a couple games and you realize your offensive line ain't what you thought it was going to be. The running backs ain't what you thought they were going to be. The receivers have issues. And you start working yourself away from what the expectations were. But the expectations were a national championship from Georgia, no hands down. I have a very tough time saying that that's going to be the realistic expectation this coming year. I think you'd like to get into the playoffs. You'd like to win the SEC and like to put yourselves in a position to make a run. I think that's the best that you can hope for if you're Georgia. Put yourselves in a position to make a run the same way both Ohio State and Notre Dame did to this year. All right, when we come back, we're going to continue college football conversation. We're talking about the Heisman Trophy won this year by Travis Hunter. I thought he was the rightful winner, even with the incredible season that Ashton Jeanty had. I thought Travis Hunter was the best player in college football, and that's what I want the award to signify. I got a bunch of guys, a bunch of names here, who will and also who won't win the Heisman Award. And one of these guys, you might be surprised where one of these guys, which side of will or won't I'm putting them on. I'll tell you who it is and where he ends up on the other side. It's Abe Gordon coming to you live here. I'm on till 2:30 today. We'll hand things off to Hawks coverage. Big MLK Day game at Madison Square Garden against the New York Knicks coming up later on 92.9 the game. Chris Thomas is going to be hanging out at Twin Peaks in Kennesaw after the Hawks game until 7:30. He's got a show, and then Bo Squidbilly Morgan has got a watch party there starting at 7, also at Twin Peaks, Kennesaw. So if you're driving around, you're listening to me all day, and you want a little bit more 92.9 The Game action in your life, head up to Twin Peaks, Kennesaw today and hang out with Chris Turtle Thomas and Bo Squidbilly Morgan. I'm here at the Georgia World Congress Center, Playoff Fan Central here until 2:30. It's Abe Gordon on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
We'll be right back. Welcome back in. It's Abe Gordon here, live 92.9 The Game. Look at how quick they broke down that set. My goodness. It's like ESPN was never here on this golden playoff field. Live at Playoff Fan Central at the Hall A of the Georgia World Congress Center, what you might commonly referred to as Fan Fest or the fan experience here. A lot of fans getting ready to hang out for the whole day. I saw a guy with two bags of merch. It's got to cost like $800. Like, yeah, as much as that guy had, it had to have cost $800.
Yeah, you have to bring your wallet in this joint.
Well, it's one thing for Notre Dame to buy gear, right? They ain't been here in a while. Ohio State.
You think it's old hat?
You going to go every single year? Like, I don't know. Let's just say it's in New Orleans
so
next year.
Think
Phoenix,
about
you going to go next year and buy $800 more worth?
But think about it like this. You have to – the whole journey, are you going to the Orange Bowl, to the championship? Are you buying merch every step of the way?
Well, and I think this is part of the discussion with some teams. I think some fans – like Penn State, show up at each game because it might be their last and they want to watch a college football playoff game, blah, blah, blah. Some schools, and look, it's not the worst trip in the world for Georgia to have gone to New Orleans, right?
Right.
From a distance perspective. I think there's a lot of people who didn't go to New Orleans because they thought, we'll go to the game when it's in Atlanta. And so I do think there are some fan bases that will think that way. Boise State, however, went. And if they had won their game, they would have shown up in a big – Arizona State fans
right.
went. And you know, would have if they had beaten Texas, would have shown up. So I think there's a little bit of both of that. But a lot of Notre Dame green, a lot of Ohio State red, as you might expect it to be. This game is, what, 7 hours away? Just over 7 hours away. And so – look, we got a couple of hours here left on the show, and then just kill some time until it's kickoff. I'm going to go on a long run. You're not, Gordon.
I'm not.
Just looking at me crazy. The more, the closer it gets to me being done with this show in 2 hours, the more it looks like I'm going to try and do this run on a treadmill. It's not really warming up, man. And I'll make my final decision when I get out and walk the dog and see how we're feeling. I'll try and go without, like, a face cover. I'll wear a beanie, but I won't go with a face cover that I pull all the way up and just kind of get a feeling if I do go.
So you were telling me earlier how much, like, on a run, like today, how much would you cover up?
Because of today's temperature, this would be my first run wearing a long sleeve shirt in – I don't even know how long. Like, I don't run wearing long sleeves, but I also don't normally run when the weather says feels like 8. But I got to get a long run in. I got the Red Top Rumble, 11.5-mile trail race coming, and so I got to get some distance in. Normally on a run, even if it's like 38 degrees, I'll wear shorts. Sometimes if I'm feeling a little nervous, I might put on a calf sleeve just to keep my calves warm because I have calf issues. I don't know if it's dehydration or what, but
no leggings, no, you know, dry fit. Like,
I have one pair of what I would call runner's tights.
Yeah,
leggings, I guess, if you want to call
them.
Well,
I mean, you know, lack of a better term.
I'm sure that's the dude term for them, but yeah, longs, compression pants. We want to call them compression
pants. We'll go with compression
like that.
Pants. There we go.
Yeah, I get so hot so quick. That I normally just run in shorts.
Okay.
And so there's still a pretty decent chance that, like, not only will I run outside today, but I'll be like, I just can't go with the long sleeve shirt, and I go with a short sleeve shirt.
That's bananas.
It's only bananas if it's still a problem after the first mile or so. Once I get a mile in, my body warms up, and I don't think about it. I don't even think about it.
But the cool down has to be crazy.
There's no cool down.
There's no cool down.
No, I finished my run, 11 miles.
And you straight into the heat? What are you doing?
As soon as I get home, I take my dog out for a walk. So, like, the cool down is, I guess, walking the dog. But, like, I would have a jacket. Like, I'll put on the beanie and the jacket and all. You got to remember, at this temperature, if I am outside, I won't sweat that much. I won't sweat that much. So, well, there you go. Anyways, 2025 Heisman. is really interesting to me. And I've seen the odds. I don't really care about the numbers. People love Arch Manning. And I just unequivocally, absolutely do not. Like, I am just not in this Arch Manning camp. And I'm not saying he's going to be a bust. I'm not saying he's going to be terrible. I've seen enough to make me really question what he's capable of next season.
That was going to be my question. Because I don't feel like I've seen enough of him throwing the ball. Like, I mean, we've had instances of him throwing the football, but I haven't seen, like, a full slate of just him game plan.
He had a couple games when Quinn was injured where he was the guy, and right. It was okay. It wasn't breathtaking. It certainly wasn't enough to hold Quinn Ewers off the field when he returned. And so, like, the question of, like, Arch Manning, by the way, losing his top two receivers because they're both going to the NFL draft, like, I cannot stress to you guys how much I do not buy him being the game's best quarterback. I just don't. So, Arch Manning for me is in my avoid camp. Here are three guys that I love. And again, this would be more for, like, if you were betting, take the odds on these guys because their odds are going to be a little bit lower. They're a little bit further run. But Cade Klubnik at Clemson. 33 touchdowns, 5 interceptions in 2024. He's experienced. He's not going to have that terrible Georgia loss on his schedule at the start. They play LSU. They play LSU. So he's got an opportunity against what has been a relatively porous LSU pass defense in recent years. He's got an opportunity to get off to a hot start on national TV in a top 25 win. And have a good debut and go from there. So I love Cade Klubnik. I think Clemson's got an opportunity to rebound in the ACC. I think there's real potential there, a one-loss team, maybe even undefeated in the regular season. I love Cade Klubnik as a Heisman candidate. Jeremiah Smith, obviously we'll see him tonight, but another year under his belt. Emeka Abuka is gone. He's going to be the alpha. It's up to Chip Kelly at that point to figure it out. The question is, who's going to be throwing the ball to him? Who's going to be throwing the ball to him? And that's the big question because that obviously can matter. And then another guy, again, we're talking like kind of more wild card, dark horse type discussions here. John Mateer is expected to be the quarterback of the Oklahoma Sooners, transferred from Washington State. If he can get the Sooners back on track in SEC, he'll be the reason why. And I think what he does, his game, I think is a highlight film. The combination of his arm and his legs, the explosive combo, again, it would take Oklahoma running like 10-2, 9-3 at worst to do this. But I think John Mateer is interesting. I mentioned Arch Manning. I would avoid him. Sam Levitt. A lot of people on the Sam Levitt train after his performance, a lot with his legs as well at Arizona State. What is that offense going to be without Cam Scatabo? Is really interesting to me. Obviously a huge playmaker. I'm a little concerned about what they're going to do without him being the heartbeat of that offense. And then, like, just in general, and this has kind of been trending the past couple of years, I'm not hot and heavy on anyone for Georgia. Like there's just too many questions. Their offense tries to be too balanced. It just doesn't feel like Georgia's going to produce a Heisman winner anytime soon. If it is, it would have been a quarterback. You know, Carson Beck entered this season as one of the Heisman favorites. I'm not putting Gunnar Stockton in that discussion immediately. A couple of guys that I'm keeping my eye on. I'm not really putting them in that love category like I have with Cade Klubnik. But guys I'm keeping an eye out on, Drew Aller. He's going to have some experience in big games. If he can, if their passing attack at Penn State can become a little bit more well-rounded with Tyler Warren gone, if they can develop some receivers, I do think Drew Aller can have some big games in him. Garrett Nussmeier at LSU. A lot of people, I don't know if they like him to win the Heisman. A lot of people think his QB1 in next year's NFL draft. Garrett Nussmeier, big arm there. He should have playmakers if they can stay out of legal issues, but who knows what's going on there. But a big arm and should have some playmakers. A couple other guys. We already mentioned one guy playing tonight in Jeremiah Smith. How about a guy for the other team? Jeremiah Love. Keep an eye on Notre Dame running back Jeremiah Love and what he could do next year. SMU quarterback Kevin Jennings, right? A little bit more familiar this time around now that people aren't going to overlook them. Another young receiver, Ryan Williams, Alabama. Caleb Downs at Ohio State. We just had a guy that does multiple things, including on the defensive side of the ball, win the Heisman. Caleb Downs, if they let him return some kicks, combined with I think he's the best safety in college football. Wonder if he can make a discussion. Georgia Tech, the returning quarterback, Haynes King. You do wonder with his gamesmanship if he can enter that conversation. And then Tennessee running back Dylan Sampson. Look, a lot of people had some votes for Dylan Sampson this year. And another year later, he'd have to do it again. And Tennessee obviously would have to win some of these games that they lost. Need to beat Alabama. Need to beat Florida. Need to beat Georgia. I'm trying to remember who else they had in their schedule. Oklahoma. You know, obviously they would need to win those games. But if Dylan Sampson continues to average like 150 yards in the SEC, that might be enough to get him some conversation as well. Speaking of Haynes King, and I teased it earlier on, but Brent Key, the head coach for the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets, is going to join us at some point here. I know he's walking around. We'll find out exactly when they make their way here. I know we're scheduled to have him at 1:20. If they come a little bit earlier than that, we will take him. But expecting to have Brent Key on site as well. All right, when we come back, we're going to dive back into the Falcons conversation. Oh, boy. You sat there and watched the Commanders, the team the Falcons probably could have and should have beaten. They certainly took them to the brink on the road. That game is one of the reasons the Falcons missed the playoffs, and I got a whole list of games that the Falcons probably could have and maybe should have won as to how they didn't make the playoffs. But the bigger question is ultimately what led to the Falcons missing the playoffs, and can they fix that before, leading into next season? So what cost the Falcons the playoffs? We'll take a deep dive into this here on the other side. It's Abe Gordon coming to you live from the Georgia World Congress Center Hall A. It is the College Football Playoff Fan Central here. Ohio State, Notre Dame getting ready to kick things off later tonight for the national championship. A lot of fans here in attendance taking in the sights and scenes beforehand. It's Abe Gordon. When we come back, more Atlanta Falcons discussion right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app. Welcome back in, 92.9 The Game. Abe Gordon here hanging out. Just under 2 hours left in the show before we hand things over to Atlanta Hawks basketball. Of course, MLK Day today in Atlanta and across the nation. And the Atlanta Hawks are going to be taking on the New York Knicks in Madison Square Garden. We talked about it a little bit earlier in the show. Disappointing that MLK can't be a home game today. But considering what's going on downtown here with the national championship game, I understand it. Frustrated by it all the same. Play that game early, man. If it's noon, if it's 1 o'clock, find a way to make it work. But unfortunately not the case. But we do still get Hawks basketball on MLK Day. It's just going to be in Madison Square Garden. And for the Hawks coming out off of that win that they had on Saturday night against the Boston Celtics, hopefully everyone's able to play again. But we know how Trey likes to show up and show out in Madison Square Garden. So looking forward to the sort of show that he could put on. We're here getting ready for the national championship game tonight. As we mentioned, Notre Dame and Ohio State are going to kick it off at about 7:30. Brent Key, the Georgia Tech head coach, he's walking around here at Playoff Fan Central somewhere. And he's going to stop by our little set here, and we're going to chat with him hopefully in about 20 or 30 minutes. We'll see when he pops by, but expected to be joined by Brent Key in a little bit. In the meantime, how did the Falcons miss the playoffs? No, I'm serious. Like, how did that team miss the playoffs? And it's been a couple of weeks since the season ended. It's been a couple of months since we lost control of our own future in regards to the playoff run. And I'm still astonished that they couldn't find a way into the playoffs after being 6-3, 4-0 in the division. And it, look, if the season had started out differently, then maybe you have a different feeling about it. But there's no way to look at the Falcons' season and feel it was anything but blown circumstances. Again, if you were 4-4 or 5-4, 4-5, whatever, through nine games, and you were 2-2 in the division, you're like, ah, man, this season didn't turn out to be what I thought it could have been. We're going to have to figure some things out. You were 6-3, 4-0 in the division, and everything was trending upwards. And you're look, I mean, it obviously feels dumb now. I don't blame anyone for having had that conversation at the time, but we're like, man, could the Falcons be the 2 seed? Could they be the 1 seed? Could they make a Super Bowl run? Like, those were conversations that were had for 1 week and 1 week only. And then you got a bunch of straight losses, 4 of them. And that conversation was, can we find a way into the playoffs? And then ultimately that wasn't the conversation as well. You look at the Falcons against 2024 playoff teams. They were 3-6. And that should tell you right there, that's where they missed the playoffs, right? They didn't beat the good teams. They maybe ran up their record against some of these other teams, right? 3-6, 2 of those wins were against the Bucs. 2 of them were against the Bucs. The other one was against the Eagles on that Monday night, week 2, that fourth quarter comeback. Here's how your record against playoff teams ran in 2024. You lost to the Steelers in week 1 by 8. You did not run a competitive offensive game plan. You limited them to no touchdowns, and you lost that game. Again, when I'm asking about the Falcons missing the playoffs and how close maybe they were, you lost to the Steelers in a game in which you didn't allow an offensive touchdown. It feels like that was a winnable game. You lost it. We just mentioned you beat the Eagles in week 2, 1 point, really fun comeback, awesome watch party. Week 3, lost to the Chiefs by 5. Remember, there was that missed pass interference. Kyle Pitts probably should have been called. You get that call, and you probably win that game. Again, you're close. You're not that far off. You beat the Bucs twice, once in week 5, once in week 8. The first one by 6 in overtime. That was Kadero Hodge. And the second one by 5 in regulation. Week 11, you get obliterated by the Broncos playoff team by 32 points. Week 13, and again, you're 3-6 against playoff teams this year, and it could have been way different. You lost to the Chargers by 4. Kirk Cousins threw what? 4 interceptions, and you once again didn't allow an offensive touchdown. One of those was a pick 6, and that helped, obviously. You're not far off. Week 14, lose to the Vikings by 21. That game went from 21-21 to 35-21 without the offense touching the ball. If you remember, the defense allowed a score, fumbled on the kickoff, defense allowed another score. You were right there with the Vikings. And then it fell apart, and by the time it was 35-21, now you're trying to get back into it, and you start making mistakes, and it's a problem. And then week 17, you lose to the Commanders in overtime. You lost the coin toss. That was its own factor. But clock management was a disaster. And that goes back to not calling timeouts and wasting time. And there you have it. And so you're not far off. Like if we're going to be honest, obviously it was a massively disappointing season for the Atlanta Falcons. But you could still look game by game. And even in a game by game situation, you could be like, man, a play there, a play here. And we probably make the playoffs. You're not far off. So over the course of the season, what cost the Falcons the playoffs? I think everyone wants to jump to one of two things. Quarterback play in the middle of the season. I think that's certainly one of them. And coaching decisions. And whether that is and to me, it's more coaching than quarterback play. Because the coach's job is to recognize the quarterback play has been poor and make adjustments and make changes. And it took too long to do that. So as much as Kirk Cousins was an issue, and he was, Raheem Morris allowed it to continue being an issue because you didn't make a change. Between a poor offensive game plan in week 1 that left you non-competitive, between the decision to stick with Kirk Cousins for games 3 and game 4 when it was very apparent something was wrong, And then the clock management issues aside in the Washington game, combined with, and I don't know if this is Raheem Morris's fault or not, the defense not being interested in playing in that final Week 18 game. Is it up to Raheem to get those guys to show up or not? I don't know. Maybe you throw that one in there, maybe you don't. But clock management, sticking with Kirk Cousins when you didn't need to stick with him, an offensive game plan in Week 1 that left you non-competitive. When I look at what cost the Falcons the playoffs more than anything else, it was the head coaching.
So, can I ask you a question? Not that I'm disagreeing at all. At what point do you say, okay, Kirk, we've seen enough?
Game 2. After the second game.
Really?
Yeah, after the second game.
In the game where he brought you back from the
Something.
At the game 2 where you win?
What are you talking about? The Eagles?
Yeah.
No. I'm talking about game 2 of the losing streak.
Oh, the losing streak.
When it started. No, you're 6-3. You're fine with
okay.
Something turned. They refused to admit what. I refuse to believe it just happened. I refuse to believe that teams adjusted to Kirk Cousins and the off. No. Something was going on. I don't care if it's mental. I don't care if it's physical. If you're so bad as a head coach that you can't see that something's wrong.
No, I agree.
That's
with
a problem. Now, I do believe that Raheem could see something was going wrong and wanted to try and work through it. You don't have the win-loss record. You don't have the division lead. You don't have the advantages to work through it. You got to make a call, and it's a tough call.
You don't have the good graces enough to work through it.
Well, I don't care about good graces come if you make the playoffs, but we weren't sitting here, and we don't have the time to make the playoffs. And so that second game where Kirk Cousins just didn't have it, a change needed to be made. And you waited 2 games too long, even though one of those was a win, and it potentially cost you the season. That game against the – look, I'm suggesting, and we go back to it, loss against the Saints, loss against the Broncos, right?
Right.
You got to remember, that's heading into your bye week. Something is wrong with Kirk Cousins. You score 6 points in that game against the Broncos. Something is wrong with Kirk Cousins. You need to make the change. You got a bye week to deal with it, and you play the Chargers at home. Chargers again. You lost that game in which you did not give up an offensive touchdown. If it's Michael Penix against the Chargers and not Kirk Cousins, you probably win that game. And then who knows what happens as you go on the road to Minnesota. And I don't care that it sucks that Kirk Cousins' storyline is gone because he's not the starter. That's not what I'm here for. I'm here to try and make the playoffs. And I think Raheem absolutely bungled that just as poorly as he bungled the timeout situation against the Commanders. When I look at all the factors, lack of the pass rush early on. And look, maybe you credit Raheem because he apparently got more involved
in
the defense.
Put his hands on the defense, right.
All right, maybe you credit him for that. Fine. Kyle Pitts. Fine. No one's going to reach Kyle Pitts. Kyle Pitts is just on his own little island, in his own head, not wanting to play ball. That's on Kyle Pitts. The disappearing acts routinely, did it cost you the playoffs? Yeah, because that guy needs to be a factor.
Right.
The injuries, sure, but every team deals with them. I mean, I'm not going to blame the injuries as that. I know you had to deal with moving around the offensive line. Now, if you want to say the injury is a Kirk Cousins thing, that's a different discussion. But until they admit he was injured, we're not going to just presume, even though I do,
and that
something's wrong.
And that's what I was assuming, that I always thought that maybe he was injured. And then it became to a point where it wasn't an injury. It was mental, because you could
it
see
him. It
was
both. I think it was
with,
both.
But with the hesitation, the
here's
yips,
the thing.
Or
here's
whatever
the thing.
It was.
I don't care what it was.
Right.
I don't care if it's mental. I don't care if it's physical. I don't care if it's neither of them. And maybe it just Father Time and opposing defensive coordinator. I don't care what the reason is. As soon as you understand that Broncos game, he leaves you non-competitive, you got to make a change. And he didn't do that. So when I look back at this season, and I don't care that they were 6-3, because you don't coach half a season, you coach a full season. When I look back at this season and I look at why were the Falcons, after going 6-3, unable to make the playoffs, to me it was coaching. And I've said it before, and I really like Raheem Morris. I'm not saying you should fire him. That's not what I'm suggesting. I think he can be a very good head coach, but he better learn a lot from this first season. Because when I look at this first season, he was a net negative. He was a net negative on this team. And you can't have your head – this is when we talk and look at some of the dumb head coaches in the NFL and start talking about this guy's costing his team wins. I don't put Raheem normally in that category as a bad head coach or a dumb head coach. But I do think his impact on this team this year was a net negative. And I think that's the biggest reason the Falcons missed the playoffs.
Yeah, because there's no games that I can honestly think of where I can say Raheem won us the game. Where he strategically put something together. Okay, we can say about he put his hands on the defense, he went into the drawing board.
Yeah, but the only games they won at that point were the Raiders and the Giants. Like, if you can't beat those two bum teams with or without Raheem putting his hands on the defense, you got other problems.
Even overall, there's no game that comes to mind right offhand where you can say, man, I'm glad we had Coach Raheem Morris.
No, and a lot of it is going to boil down to it's more about what you expect from Zach Robinson. Like we're blaming the Steelers loss more on Zach Robinson than Raheem.
Right.
But Raheem signed off on this pistol game plan that they thought was going to work. In general, a net negative. And I don't, by the way, I don't need Raheem to be a net positive. Like, I don't think you're going to look at most teams and be like, unless the coach is the offensive play caller like a Sean McVay, stuff like that. And I guess there are situations like with Dan Campbell where you're like, oh, he decided to go for it. And so, like, I guess there's some situations like that. But in general, he was a net negative, and that's a problem. All right, that's going to do it for the Atlanta Falcons for the moment. When we come back, we're going to go outside the perimeter. We're also going to be keeping it inside the perimeter at some point whenever Brent Key, Georgia Tech head coach, stops by. So we're going to play it by ear, see who's here. If he's here, we'll talk to him. If not, we'll go outside the perimeter. It's Abe Gordon coming to you live from Playoff Fan Central on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.